Hello and welcome back to Death and Taxes, a private wealth podcast from Burgess Salmon. My name is Guy Broadfield and I'm delighted to be joined by my colleagues from our tax and trust team, Tim Williams and Sarah Carlion. We are expecting 2024 to be an interesting year in the world of private wealth, not least because we have an election looming and the main parties are beginning to set out their visions of how the UK's tax regime should change. Once we have more detail on that, you can expect several podcasts exploring what is being proposed and what it might mean in practice. In the meantime, we thought it would be helpful to summarise how inheritance tax works at present, so that any future proposals and policy changes can be understood in the right context. Today's focus is on inheritance tax and is part one of a two-part series. We are going to be focusing on what inheritance tax is, what the rates are, and how and when charges can arise. In part two, we will look more specifically at relief from tax and exemptions and provide some more practical examples. Okay, so Tim and Sarah, thank you very much for coming on the pod this time to talk about inheritance tax. Tim, to you first. I mean, commonly when inheritance tax, you see it mentioned in the papers, in the press, for example, it's often described as the death tax, which to an extent is true. And in many cases, that's how many people come across inheritance tax in their own personal lives. But it's slightly more complicated than that in practice. So perhaps you could just talk to that in the first instance.
Of course, yeah. So you're absolutely right, Guy. The IHT is often thought of as a death tax because it does apply when you die. And that's, as you say, when most people experience it. You have your estate is taxed to inheritance tax on death, subject to the various exemptions things that we'll talk about. But there are also occasions on which a charge can arise on lifetime transfers as well. So if you give something to a trust, or in certain circumstances, if you give something to a company, you can end up with an inheritance tax charge immediately on the value you've given away. And then there are also other things that interact between lifetime and death. So what we call potentially exempt transfers or PETs is an instance where you have a charge based on something you've done in your lifetime that then kicks back in to your estate on death. So there are various points that you need to be alive to inheritance tax during lifetime that you may not immediately think of as being chargeable transfers for IHT.
Yeah, and that concept of chargeable transfers is quite technical and we're common to talk about that. But if we just take a step back, what inheritance tax is looking at is transfers of value by an individual, i.e. moving assets or value from their estate somewhere else, whether that's into trust, whether that's to a person, whether that's on death. And inheritance tax is designed to capture that value and put a tax on it. We can come on to talk about what a transfer of value is for those purposes, but that's really what we're looking at. So, Sarah, in terms of, I think at the outset it's helpful to make it less abstract and put some numbers on it. So let's start with the charge on death. What are we talking there when it comes to headline rates and allowances? Just for the audience to put a bit of colour on it.
Yeah, absolutely. So generally speaking, on death, the value held in your estate will be charged at a rate of 40%. There's a chance and a possibility that you might be able to benefit from a lower percent of 36% if you choose to give a certain proportion of your estate to charity. But broadly speaking, most estates would be looking at 40%, but that is above first £325,000 in your estate, which is referred to as the nil rate band. So the first £325,000 of your estate is taxed at a rate of 0%, so essentially no inheritance tax payable on that, but anything above will be charged at 40%.
The nil rate band is a really important concept in inheritance tax, isn't it, Guy? And it's not only important as a sort of as an idea within IHT, but actually it's quite a key thing in the sort of policy terms of IHT and how inheritance tax affects taxpayers across the country.
Yes, exactly. And I think you can think of it as it is in effect inheritance tax allowance, for want of a better word, and it's something that applies across all taxpayers. Now, the nil rate band has been in place in its current form of £325,000 since April 2009, and in broad terms it's expected to remain at that level until probably at least 2028, unless the government changes it. So whilst it is a generous allowance in some aspects, of course, over the last 15 years, the value and the worth of the allowance has decreased as asset prices have increased. And so more people, by virtue of their asset wealth, have come out of the nil rate band and are more likely to pay tax, inheritance tax now on their death, subject to there being exemptions, which we'll talk about.
And that's the sort of fiscal drag that the taxpayers are experiencing across the board, isn't it? With, you know, as rates and allowances don't keep pace with increased wages, say, in income tax terms, the same is happening in inheritance tax terms with asset bases. But I mean, Sarah, there have been attempts to make the nil rate band larger over the years, haven't they? I mean, they with maybe greater or lesser success.
That's right, Tim. Yeah. So everybody's got their nil rate band. And now we also have the transferable nil rate band, which essentially means if you've got a married couple, a spouse or civil partner, if one of them dies and hasn't used any of their nil rate band or hasn't used all of it, that unused amount will transfer automatically to the survivor. So we have a situation where someone could die. Their husband, for example, has died before them, and they may have £650,000 taxed at 0%. We then had the Conservative government who brought in the residence nil rate band, and that was with the aim of giving people up to £1 million taxed at 0%. Now, the residence nil rate band is a complicated beast, but essentially it allows a person to benefit from an additional £175,000. Where they leave broadly an interest in a property to a lineal descendant. So commonly people leaving their home to their children will allow them to get that additional £175,000. As with the nil rate band and the transferable nil rate band, any unused 175 from their spouse or civil partner can also be transferred. So that's how we get to the £1 million figure that we currently have to play with for most estates.
It's probably worth pointing out at this point that the amount of nil rate band that is available on your death can be reduced by transfers during your lifetime. So, for example, if within 7 years before your death you've made outright gifts to individuals or gifts into trust, then those can be taken into account when you die and reduce the available nil rate band. Any gifts where you have reserved a benefit, which we'll come to talk about, they can also reduce the nil rate band.
So that's when IHT can apply, but does it apply to everybody? Who's within the scope of the inheritance tax net, Guy?
So broadly, for UK tax purposes, that depends on an individual's domicile status. So if that individual is domiciled in the UK, then their estate, the value of the assets in their name, is subject to inheritance tax, and that's for their worldwide estate. If an individual is not domiciled in the UK, then they are subject to inheritance tax only on the value of their UK estate, broad terms, assets in the UK. Now, domicile is, of course, a complex legal concept, which we discuss in detail in our other podcast. So please take a look at that if you'd like to understand more about domicile and how it interacts with a residence. But broadly, what the IHT rules and the IHT legislation looks to do is to reduce exposure to inheritance tax for those people who only have a temporary link with the UK, and it looks to impose inheritance tax on those people who are sufficiently closely connected with the UK, and the concept they use is domicile. So in broad terms, we've talked about the scope of inheritance tax and when it can be charged and the rates and headline numbers. Like any good analysis of any tax, an important piece for us to discuss is exemptions from tax and indeed reliefs that can, you know, if they apply, either take you outside the scope of the tax or limit your liability. So when it comes to inheritance tax, there are some key exemptions. And Sarah, what are the main ones that you come across in day-to-day practice?
Yeah, so I think by far the the most prevalent one is the spousal exemption. So gifts made to a spouse or civil partner, whether that be during lifetime or death, are exempt. So no inheritance tax payable on the amount being transferred to them. And we have similar rules applying to charities. So if you choose to leave a legacy in your will to a charity or leave the entirety of your estate to charity, again, that will be exempt from inheritance tax. And as we mentioned earlier, if you did have any of your estate which would be chargeable to inheritance tax, you'd benefit from that lower 36% tax rate.
Yeah, and it's worth pointing out that if you have a transfer value which is exempt from IHT, then that value doesn't use up your nil rate band, which we've talked about. Mm-hmm. The question of domicile is important when it comes to spouse exemption, because broadly you need to make sure that both parties are either domiciled in the UK for inheritance tax purposes, or indeed both parties are domiciled outside the UK. And if you have a mismatch, then your spouse exemption can be limited in those circumstances. But that's a point to look at when it comes to more international couples. And of course, when it comes to the spouse exemption, that applies both to lifetime gifts, as you mentioned, but also transfers on death. There are some exemptions from inheritance tax which apply to lifetime gift only. And Tim, would you just want to talk to some of the main points around those?
Yes, thanks, Guy. So gift out of surplus income is a key relief that can apply on transfers in your lifetime. So broadly what that means is if you make a gift to another person as a part of a settled pattern of giving of income, which you don't need to maintain your lifestyle, then that doesn't come back into your estate for inheritance tax purposes, even if you don't survive for 7 years. So we mentioned very briefly earlier on the concept that if you make a gift of something and you live for 7 years, it's outside your inheritance tax estate. But if you don't survive for 7 years, then it can be brought back in to calculate your death estate for inheritance tax purposes. If you make gifts out of surplus income, complying with the conditions I just mentioned, then you don't bring those amounts back into play. So it can be potentially quite a valuable relief if you have a significant income that you don't need. You can pass that on outside of the potentially exempt transfer regime and free of inheritance tax.
Yeah, and that's the benefit of an exemption compared to a relief. If you can benefit from the exemption, it takes outside the scope of those rules. It's probably now a good time to talk about relief, because there are certain assets which can benefit from inheritance tax relief, which, similar to an exemption, can reduce the amount of tax payable, in some cases to nil, but it's a slightly different process to go through. You know, you have to take into account the value of that asset and then work out whether the relief applies to reduce the tax payable. Now, typically, when we're talking about inheritance tax, two of the main reliefs, both for transfers during lifetime and on death, are business property relief, also known as business relief, and agricultural property relief.
And Guy, we're going to do a more detailed episode on both those reliefs later in the season.
Now, Tim, when it comes to individuals, often they want to make lifetime gifts of assets that they own. And particularly when it comes sometimes to the family home, they're keen on passing that down to the next generation with good intentions of limiting inheritance tax. But in some cases, they may still remain in the house and continue to benefit from it. Now, that sounds to me like it could be an issue. Perhaps you could explain in more detail.
Absolutely, Guy.
Too good to be true.
Lots of things in tax terms that sound too good to be true often are too good to be true. And there is specific legislation called the Reservation of Benefit Code, which looks at just that situation. And you're right, the classic example is, I would like to give my house to my children to reduce my inheritance tax estate, but I'd like to carry on living in it. And the carrying on living in it bit is the reservation of benefit part of that. And what the rules do in very basic terms is, if you've given something away, but you keep using it, you reserve the benefit, it will, for inheritance tax purposes, be as if you haven't made the gift. If you die while you're still reserving a benefit, you're still using the property, then you will be taxed as if you still owned it. So the planning just doesn't work, basically. There are ways around reservation of benefit. One is if you give away your family home, don't carry on living in it. But another is to pay a market rent for the property. So this is because the benefit is not just the living there, it's that you've deprived the person that you've given it to of the use and enjoyment of that property. You haven't given them the sort of unencumbered use of it. But in paying a rent, you effectively you pay for whatever benefit you're having. So the person does have enjoyment of that property.
Well, certainly, Tim, sounds like yes, if it is too good to be true, then something is awry. And really the important point there is for listeners is, you know, like most taxes, there are detailed anti-avoidance measures which are designed to prevent artificial avoidance or taking advantage of certain planning or loopholes. So the gift of reservation of benefit rules are the part of the anti-avoidance measures for inheritance tax. You've also got the pre-owned asset tax regime, which was brought in 2005 in effect to aid the gift of reservation of benefit provisions and make sure that the rules prevent certain types of artificial avoidance of IHT based on the legislation at the time. So that's another key consideration when it comes to giving away assets. A, whether you fall within the gift of reservation of benefit rules, and secondly, whether even if you have managed to get outside of those, whether you might also fall into the pre-owned asset tax, which in very broad terms looks to impose an income tax charge in respect of assets that fall under those rules that you have purported to give away.
And it's probably worth noting, isn't it, Guy, that those rules, both on the reservation of benefit side and the pre-owned asset tax side, are complicated and have changed quite a lot over time. So over the years, there have been various arrangements that people have come up with to try and work within the boundaries of those codes, but actually a lot of them, particularly things like home loan schemes and other arrangements like that, gifts and lease back arrangements, have been found to not work as people thought they did. So if you do come across those arrangements, it's important to interrogate them really thoroughly to make sure that they do actually work, or if they don't work, what can you do to unpick them?
So we spent a lot of time so far talking about the inheritance tax regime as it applies to individuals, both in their lifetimes and on death. But as we mentioned at the outset, is a tax that can also apply to trusts themselves rather than just individuals. So Sarah, can you explain a bit about the so-called relevant property regime?
Yeah, absolutely. So the relevant property regime was one of the bigger changes that came in around 2006-2007, by which most trusts nowadays that are set up will fall into. Essentially, what happens there is that there's a charge to inheritance tax when the trust is set up. So funds going into the trust will be faced with an immediate 20% charge to inheritance tax. You then also have what's called the periodic charges. So every 10 years of the trust's existence, there'll be another charge of around 6% of the trust fund value. And that will be that's an added layer of compliance for trusts falling within this regime. And then finally, you'll also have a third charge that will happen during the course of the trust lifetime, and that will happen whenever there's a distribution from the trust. So if funds are given to a beneficiary, for example, again there'll be another charge to inheritance tax there, so it'll bite again whenever those what are referred to as exit charges come into play.
Thanks, Sarah. I mean, as I said earlier on, inheritance tax is looking at capital. So this is all about capital moving in or out of a trust. Trustees will often have assets that generate income, say an investment portfolio, for dividends or rental income, whatever. When they distribute income, it's not subject to those inheritance tax rules that you've just described, is it? It's taxed on the trustees, and then they pay the income out with a tax credit to the beneficiaries. And that's quite a complicated area that we won't have time to touch on today. But though trusts have their own separate regime, the relevant property regime that you've described, it does interact with an individual's inheritance tax position as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, so we touched earlier on chargeable lifetime transfers and how these can be brought back into the inheritance tax charge on death, depending on whether you've survived those 7 years since giving that gift. And putting funds into a trust is a prime example of that. So if somebody puts funds into a trust, doesn't survive the 7 years, they will have only have paid a 20% inheritance charge at that entry point. What the regime is designed to do is to capture that, and there'll be a top-up amount of an additional 20% inheritance tax charge payable to get you in line with that 40% rate on death. So that's kind of the blend of the personal tax which you face, as well as those trusts. It's all brought in together on your death.
And in the same way as individuals can qualify for various reliefs that we're going to spend a lot of time talking about in another episode, trustees can benefit from those as well, can't they? So business property relief, agricultural property relief can be available to trustees as well as to the individuals creating those trusts.
That's right, and that can alleviate some of these inheritance tax charges that we've spoken about.
So thanks, Sarah. That's a really helpful run through the relevant property regime. So the name relevant property suggests that there might be some things that are not relevant to inheritance tax. I mean, Guy, what sort of things are we talking about when we think of things outside the relevant property regime?
So when it comes to things outside the relevant property regime, in truth, there are certain types of asset that's set out in the inheritance tax legislation which are defined as excluded property. So for example, a future interest in a trust, which it's called a reversionary interest, is considered excluded property, i.e. that interest is outside of the relevant property regime and the IHT rules, provided certain conditions are met. That perhaps is a slightly niche point, a niche category of excluded property. Typically, when it comes to excluded property, the main idea is that what we're talking about is an interest in what's called an excluded property trust, which is broadly a trust created by a settlor, i.e. an individual who created the trust, who was not domiciled or deemed domiciled in the UK when they gave assets to it, and where that trust holds non-UK assets. So the idea is you've got a trust arrangement set up by a non-dom which holds non-UK assets. You know, they're in very broad terms, there are very few connecting factors to the UK inheritance tax regime for that type of trust. And that is considered to be an excluded property trust. And by virtue of the fact it's excluded, means it's not in the relevant property regime. So all of those rules that Sarah mentioned previously don't apply.
And it's quite a complicated area, isn't it? Yeah, so we're going to talk about excluded property trusts in another episode in more detail, but that's a really helpful summary, Guy.
Well, Tim and Sarah, thank you for that overview of what is a very complex tax regime, and good to get into at least some of the detail. I think when it comes to inheritance tax, it is one that's particularly interesting from a political perspective, and there are complex arguments both for and against how you tax the transfer of wealth, which we haven't touched on today. From a practitioner's perspective, we've given an idea of some of the complexity of the rules, and in part two of our podcast on inheritance tax, we'll look at the question of reliefs and exemptions from a more practical perspective. But for now, thank you to Tim and Sarah for that explanation, and we'll cover the other points in part two. Thanks again for listening to this episode of Death and Taxes, the Private Wealth Podcast from Burgess Salmon. You can listen to our previous episodes and get in touch with the team at burgess-salmon.com or on our LinkedIn page. We will be publishing new episodes every fortnight on Tuesdays, covering topics such as the basics of residence and domicile for UK tax purposes, how the UK's immigration laws work in the private client context, and a special episode discussing what is announced in the spring budget. As parties publish manifestos ahead of the expected election, you can also look forward to our thoughts on what their policies might mean for private clients and their advisors. Don't forget to subscribe, and thanks again for listening.